What is up? It's Tuesday night. Welcome to episode 53 of Inside the Game. I'm DJ Wheat, joined as always by Pain User, who's noodled right now, EG Idra, and EG in control. Pain User is here. I took off his X6 tag, you guys.
Nice.
He took off his shirt. That's what we got there. I don't know if you're going to see another flash of the not here Pain User, but he's apparently here, but not. What's up, guys? It's been an interesting week with Heart of the Swarm coming out.
Yeah.
We heard the depressing stories of Idra not having beta access almost immediately. I was not happy about that, but it looks like everything got worked out.
Yeah, it actually was like for the best because I got 2 days of really bitter, funny tweets, and then I actually got the beta anyway, so.
Nice.
It's all for the best.
All for the best. All for the best. So we're going to start talking about Heart of the Swarm. Almost right away, Pain User is not there right now. Jeff, before we get started, man, I just want to say fantastic job. Your performance in the recent documentary, Genius is Falling.
Thank you.
It could win awards, man. It could win awards.
Yeah, I don't know. I grew up watching, like, Unsolved Mysteries. I'm a big CSI guy.
Yeah, Robert Stack, man.
So basically a lot of shitty television that they play off of all the stupid, like, and that's why his dick got stuck in the fridge. The way you can say it, the head nods. I really had a good time with it. The concept was awesome. And our creative team is ridiculous. They actually worked, like, 48, 72 hours straight, something ridiculous like that.
Put that together?
Yeah, dude. Like,
yeah. Why the video guys actually just passed out on a beanbag in the living room, like in the middle of editing it. He just had to crash for a little while because it was so intense.
Nice. It's a big time video. Like Thor Zane's a really big deal. Stefano's a huge deal, and Alex is away on business, so he wanted to get involved. Coordinating it all was really hard.
Are you seeing this?
Watching it, yes, we are.
I wonder why the fucking sink is clogged.
Watching everything being shot.
What?
And all.
What? Do you hear him?
I can't hear what he's saying.
He's yelling about the sink being clogged.
Yeah, it is.
Wait.
He's really mad, man. Hey. Hi, Pain User. Yo.
Yeah.
Yo, what's up? Welcome to the show, man.
What up?
Not much, man. Not much at all. We just got started.
Oh, so you guys caught that?
I don't know. We caught something about the sink and...
Yeah. My buddy seemed to leave like an unused tube of toothpaste in the sink. I don't know why, but it's clogged.
Well, welcome to the show, man. Welcome to the show.
What's up?
Let's get started. We're just introducing the show. It's Tuesday. Everyone knows episode 53, Inside the Game, and let's start with Heart of the Swarm beta, guys. I mean, it's been the hot topic right now.
I've been playing the HOTS beta every waking hour of every minute. Well, that's
every hour
that's
of when, every minute.
That's when I haven't every minute of every hour.
That's
excuse me,
right there.
That's when I haven't been working on putting together the PhD tournament that me and HD are running. But in between that, I've just been trying to catch up on as much HOTS as possible, so I actually know what's going on when I'm casting the tournament.
Well, I have put together a list of questions that I thought were relevant to the discussion of Heart of the Swarm. And before we go into kind of initial thoughts, I thought that the questions would sort of flesh out, I think, what a lot of people want to hear. So I'll go in kind of my own order here based off of what I sent you guys. First off, what do you love about the beta? Jeff?
I think it's interesting because the first time around at the beta for Wings of Liberty, it was very fresh and new, and everyone was really excited because they haven't been a part of a beta process like this. Brood War, or actually StarCraft, didn't have a beta; it had an alpha mode. It was all Blizzard. It was much smaller. They weren't owned by Activision, so it was a different experience. This time around, it's much more like community active, and there's been ridiculous imbalances. Like everyone remembers, there's that famous picture on Reddit about the roaches that had two armor and one supply and
right.
Just how ridiculous they were. So I'm kind of trying to put my head in there. I know this is a long-winded way of answering what's my favorite part about it, but I guess my favorite part about it is the excitement of change and the hope for improvement. Like right now it seems pretty dire and Zergs and Terrans are having a blast, but everyone kind of recognized. And this, it's funny that the first time, by the way, the first fucking time in StarCraft history that everyone agrees on something, it's that Protoss is shit right now.
Like, well, I mean, it's
Zerg,
not...
Terran, and Protoss all agree with it. They're like,
I mean, if you really, like, the way I see it is, and I totally agree with you, by the way, Jeff, like, you know, Terran got two new factory units, the Warhound, which is an excellent unit that has multi-purpose use against pretty much every race. I mean, they're not that great against Zerg, but they're really good for early harass. They can kite speedless lings. They can pick off queens. They can deny creep tumors. They're excellent for mineral line drops. They two-hit workers. Zerg obviously got the Swarm Host, the Viper, you know, two game-changing units that are excellent when used properly. And then, you know, if you look at Protoss, they really just weren't given any core game-changing units. They weren't given a new gateway unit. They weren't given a new robo unit. The carrier was replaced by the Tempest.
Which, we lost the unit.
Yeah, I mean, and the carrier was kind of slowly finding its home in competitive play. I mean, we saw a little bit of experimentation in late game PvP, late game PvZ. Carriers were starting to show face, and then Protoss also got a highly immobile miniature mothership that can't really attack anything. I mean, essentially, Protoss got two utility caster units, right? You got the Oracle.
The new Protoss units actually made Protoss worse. Like,
exactly.
Just because Protosses are trying to use them. If you just went back to two base Immortal Pushes and three base Colossus Sullens, Protosses would do way better than trying to incorporate the new units just because they don't actually have that much function. They're not very good.
Absolutely. And the Oracle is incredibly expensive, and I've been toying around with it, and I've yet to find a safe way to open with a safe Oracle build because they're so expensive. You have to get the Stargate up. They don't do anything offensively, so you can't defend with them. And then you also have to accumulate enough energy to start Entombing, which, I mean, Entomb is really good. It's a good ability, but, I mean...
It's really easy for Zerg to nullify. I mean, against Terran, I guess it could be better, but against Zerg, you just leave a couple of Zerglings there and a Spine Crawl on every base.
And even against Terran, if I know my opponent has a couple Oracles, I'll leave two Warhounds in each mineral line, and they'll clean up the Entombed Shells in, you know, 20 seconds.
Getting a little bit back on topic. What do you love? Anything?
I'm actually really, really happy with the new Zerg units. I think the Viper is awesome. I love having another spellcaster. Yeah. I think it makes battles a lot harder in a good way. Like, there's a lot more a good player can do with them to give themselves an advantage over a lesser player. And the Swarm Host, I don't think the Swarm Host is nearly as good as everyone thought from the start.
Man, I love the Swarm
Host. Except for Pain User, apparently. But I think Terrans and Protoss are kind of just realizing you time out the Locust, you run in, you pick off the Swarm Host, because they're actually pretty weak, like, themselves. It's the Locust of the hard part. So, like, there's micro to deal with it that people didn't realize at first, and it's still good. But I'm much, much happier with a Viper. But it's a really interesting unit anyway. There's a lot of room for positional play, for sieging, you know, just stuff that Zerg couldn't do before.
Zerg's
mid-game army was very, very, like, basic and simple and not particularly good for aggression besides multi-pronged attacks before. This gives us a lot more utility. And it'll take balance one way or the other, but the idea there is good, and it's something that makes Zerg more fun and more interesting. The other races, though, like, we just talked about how shit the Protoss units are, and they are just bad. Like, they need something different. But, and Terran, I think Terran actually kind of regressed just because the Warhound, like, makes things too simple. It's just, like, it turns everything into A-move mech, which is much more boring than, like, the Liberty Terran was, in my opinion.
You know, that being said, though, you know, I actually really enjoy the mechanics of the Warhound. Well, for many reasons.
Yeah, every Terran
player does. Mechanics?
Well, no. But I mean, from your perspective, you know, it's like a boring A-move unit, but I actually find the micro of the Warhound, you know, pretty engaging. I mean, they're very quick. They have a really high basic move speed. They can kite just about everything. And also, what I like to do is if I'm using my Warhounds, you can engage, let the Hellfire rockets go off, and then you can kite back until the cooldown is back up and then launch another salvo of Hellfire rockets. And
you can just attack them and kill everything. Yeah, if you want to be all fancy and shit.
It's a delayed
attack. More kiting.
It's a delayed attack.
They did, didn't they? All right, so you love the Warhound Pain User, is that fair to say then?
Yeah, I mean, I've been experimenting. The one thing I don't understand too much is I haven't really found a practical use for the Widowmine yet. They take two supply. They're not too expensive, but they're just, they seem very difficult to use effectively. I've used them well a couple times against only Broodlords and Ultras. Like, if a Zerg player is pushing with a bunch of Broodlords and you manage to run a bunch of Widowmines under the Broodlords, burrow them, you can take a ton of them out. And they're also really good
for... They take out an Oracle.
Yeah, but, like, that's on the off chance that the Oracle happens to fly directly over the one spot where you put the Widowmine, and that's kind of a shot in the dark. And then against Ultras, they do tremendous amount of damage when the Ultras are either charging in or their first wave. They do a ton of damage to the Ultras, but it's so situational that it's just not like the Spider-Mine from Brood War. And to me, the Spider-Mine from Brood War was one of the coolest, most unique game mechanics of any game. And I think there's something to be said for the fact that the Spider-Mines in Brood War were free. So, you know, the quantity of mines that you could deploy on a map would give you a lot of vision, would give you a lot of map control. And I frankly just think putting up gigantic minefields is fun. So, you know, the Widowmines...
Supply is definitely a problem, just because, like, if you look at everything else Terran can have for two supply, would you rather have a Warhound or a Widowmine?
Exactly.
You know, it's just kind of silly at this point. But it's also something that would be very easy to make overpowered, especially on... Well, that, another problem is that we're just playing on these beta maps, which are pretty limited. Like, they're better than old Blizzard maps, but they're still Blizzard maps. And any kind of positional control on these, like, if you put good mines on these maps, Terran would just never, ever lose, because positional control is so important, especially on some of the maps, like that one half map. Desert map, and just like it's very, very easy to make them overpowered. So
the
I
Diablo
like the Terrans
one, or what? the Diablo 3 map, or the desert cross spawn.
The ones like this, like
okay, yeah, I know the one.
Yeah, but it'd be very easy for it to be overpowered. So I like the fact that Blizzard's like starting out, and then they'll crank it up if they need to.
That's very true. I want to just move on to the next question then, which is, do you guys feel that this is a quote-unquote micro-expansion, meaning that it seems to be heading towards refining micro-based battle in the later game?
Not necessarily. I think that, like, some of the units, I mean, the Warhound certainly has some scoot and shoot micro. The mines, obviously, you have to burrow and unburrow and reposition. I think Greg kind of hit the nail on the head earlier by saying that the Swarm Host and the Viper just... I wouldn't say it's necessarily that they're gearing the game towards Warcraft 3 or caster units or micro units. Quite frankly, I think Zerg was just rather bland before. I mean... Roaches, Zerglings, and Hydras don't really have any cool abilities like Blink, Stim, you know, Siege Tanks, obviously, with Siege Mode, Hellions now with Battle Mode. Zerg units didn't really have any of that. So now the fact that Zerg has, like, a couple utility units that are pretty interesting and have some unique usage, I think it really adds a lot of dynamic into what Zerg players can do, and it makes it a lot more interesting.
Greg, what do you think?
Sorry, our internet's kind of breaking up. I couldn't hear most of the question. What was it?
The question was whether or not you feel like that with the presentation of the new units, that this is kind of gearing an expansion towards more micro-based battle in the later game.
With Zerg, late game is definitely, it has the potential to be more micro-intensive. Like, in a lot of situations, you'll end up with a base unit, a Roach Hydra, or a Link Baneling, or whatever, plus Infestors, plus Vipers. And Infestors and Vipers both have spells that you can cast throughout the battle and that you kind of have to get maximum efficiency out of your army. And so, Zerg definitely got, it has much more potential for micro in the late game. But then, like I said, with Terran, I think just the existence of the Warhound actually takes out the necessity to use units that require more micro, and the Warhound itself has just very, very basic ranged unit micro. It's like, look for concaves, maybe a little bit of kiting, whatnot. And then Protoss,
well,
I guess...
I mean, that said, from a Terran player's perspective, I actually find the Warhound micro more engaging than bio.
Yeah.
And then with Protoss, I guess, in some ways, it did. It's just, like, bad. Like, you can do a lot of micro with Tempests and support units because of all the range and positional stuff, but it's just like a delaying action until you get run over by good units, so I don't really even count it.
And, like, Jeff, honestly, man, what is your opinion about the Tempest? Because I feel like
hold on, let Jeff answer the question about the micro. Thank you.
Go for it.
And then
I don't know. I'm going to toot my own horn because I feel like I'm really smart sometimes. And a long time ago, I had said, I feel like with the introduction of these new spellcasting units, with Zerg in particular, and I was hopeful for Protoss at the time, but obviously that's been changed into a negative Nancy. I think Zerg got a hell of a lot more difficult to play in RTS, but specifically StarCraft terms, when a race gets more difficult to play, what that means is the skill ceiling has been raised so we can appreciate things more. I'm imagining a Broodlord, Swarm Host, Viper, Infestor army controlled by Jadong, and I'm...
No, I'm imagining
No, seriously,
it.
Though, he shits you not.
Oh.
He shits you not.
Wait.
Do we lose Greg?
No,
I'm here.
In control, just stop talking, man.
Oh, you guys just started laughing and talking about something else I didn't...
No, I was, like, imagining that army, and I was, like, thinking about how fucking ridiculous that potential actually is.
Yeah, I'm just, like, one of the complaints that you've heard, you know, Idris kind of famously say, and I would agree with, that is that while we have, as Wings of Liberty has gone on, certainly the statement's been less true than we thought. There has been a higher skill ceiling than was perceived. It was not inapproachable like it was for Brood War. Like what one of those guys would do in a game could not be replicated by someone that didn't have the talent, the practice partners, and I mean, like literally the talent. It just was something that you could watch, and it was kind of like watching Terrell Owens come down to the ball in the NFL. Like it was like, oh shit, he's a superhuman, and I'm really excited about that potential. That being said, I agree with Greg in the sense that you can talk about kiting with the Warhound, and that is pretty cool. I guess. It's extremely simple. The missile auto-casts, and it auto-targets things that it can
okay.
hit.
Okay, I will give you that 100%. I would have no problem with the Hellfire missiles being maybe targetable or something unique about it that's not just an automatic cast that fires at 12 range. I mean, that's a little bit absurd. When I'm playing against Protoss, I mean, Stalkers just absolutely melt, and then I've been playing around a lot with early 2 Warhound medevac drops, and, you know, obviously they 2-hit probes, so you drop 2 Warhounds, you start control-firing probes, you're 1-hitting probes in the probe line, then the auto-fire rockets additionally target probes automatically, so that kills 2 additional probes. I mean, you know, you can clear half of a Protoss mineral line in 10 seconds, and I think that's just a little bit absurd, because even a player with the fastest reaction time hardly has enough time to react.
But I think the other problem that you have with the Warhound in general is not just that their micro is pretty simple, but rather there's not a disadvantage to building a Warhound, except that it doesn't have anti-air. So, I mean, that's like...
Yeah.
That's like asking adults to do elementary math and then calling it difficult. It's like, well, as long as you do 1 + 1 = 2, you should be fine. And it's not that way. Whereas I feel like for Zerg, the Viper is fairly gas intensive. You need to consume buildings to get energy, or you don't need to, but you can. And then all of their abilities are not autocast; they're, you know, micro intensive, and you can't have them on the same hotkey as things like your swarm hosts, your infestors. I mean, you could tab through that, and I know some people do that, but typically not. And yeah. I think that makes Zerg a lot better. Whereas for Terran, stick those Warhounds on any hotkey you want, A, move them. If you're going to be really fancy, you kite. If you're not going to be really fancy, you don't have to. They got range 7 basic attack that does a shit ton of damage. And, you know, Widowmine, yeah. Pain User said it's not as cool as the Vulture Mine. I'd be really scared in a world where it was. As it is, 2 supplies ridiculous for it. Should be a little bit less.
Yeah.
But if the question is, did micro get better in Heart of the Swarm? For Terran, not as much. For Zerg, absolutely, in a really, really exciting kind of way. For Protoss, it did, but the reward doesn't reflect the value of your actions, right?
Yeah, like, sure.
What I can do with an Oracle and what I can do with a Mothership Core does not actually pay off. And then the Tempest doesn't do enough damage, and it's too expensive and supply heavy to make it worthwhile to do cool things like use the Oracle Reveal ability or an Observer or something like that to take advantage of that long range, because you're not doing enough damage to justify the cost anyways.
And then also, I feel like the Tempest's are incredibly, incredibly vulnerable. I mean, they're slow.
They kind of have to be, though.
Well, like, yeah, but
you get something range that long.
Of course, of course. But at the same time,
kind of a broken mechanic.
At the same time, I feel like, you know, the carrier had incredible sustained DPS. And even if they did get in a situation where they were in a bit of trouble and they didn't have too much cover on the ground, they did enough sustained DPS that they could kill units relatively quickly and kind of rescue themselves from that situation. But if your Tempests find themselves alone...
They didn't have 22 range, though.
Okay,
That's the big problem. It's like anything with one feature that is that ridiculous, then everything else has to be weak or it will be overpowered.
Yeah, but like
giving it that one feature, that's a terrible one feature, because the only time that kind of unit is going to be useful is in a situation where your opponent can engage it. So it just like begs for stalemates, because that's the only thing it's good for. So it encourages Protoss to fight for terrible, boring play. It's like a really, really poor unit.
I totally agree with that. And that being said, if you just think of the like excitement factor or unique factor unit, there's none.
There's none.
You know, it's just like a big capital airship that shoots a blast at 22 range. Like, cool. I mean, you know, you got to...
Not even a blast. It's just a shot. It's not area effect.
Yeah. You've got to...
It looks like it should be.
I mean,
it doesn't even one-shot Lings until you get +2, I think. It's kind of silly.
And the weird part, the scary part for me is that conceptually, they're at a dead end, because you don't give it more damage, you don't increase the attack rate, maybe you reduce the supply of it, and maybe you chip at the cost, but even then, it's still a pretty boring unit.
Yeah, exactly.
I think one of the cool ideas that was up on the secret forum for feedback on the beta is bring back the carrier, maybe tweak some of its stats or whatever, but then give it like an upgrade that's kind of like the Yamato cannon. Like a single shot for mana.
Liquid Tyler actually made a post about, you know, talking about the removal of the carrier, made a suggestion about maybe some sort of a range upgrade, and also said, well, if you can't make it like a Brood War carrier, then you might as well just, you know, give it something that is going to improve it. Considering that the unit was never really touched at all during the entirety so far of Wings of Liberty.
That being said, though, I think it was, you know, just starting to start to find its place in late game.
It was getting more use.
Yes.
Late game PvZ, you were seeing it more and more.
Yes.
It was. If you think about of all the things in the Protoss utility belt that got either a nerf or a buff throughout the duration of Wings of Liberty...
It needed tweaking for sure, but in PvZ in particular, it had a place. The reason it doesn't have much of a place, and even just in terms of the game, it's having trouble, is because against Terran, you accidentally counter it at all times. If you made Vikings for Colossus, cool. If you made Marines because you're just, you know, going Ghost Viking in late game anyways, okay. You're in place to be okay against carriers, whereas in Brood War, it was tank vulture composition, and if carriers showed up and you weren't prepared for it, you're dead. You're in a shit ton of trouble.
Yeah, that's so true. Goliath's really kind of changed that dynamic quite a bit. And well, the carrier, just based on raw stats though, in Wings of Liberty, was an absolutely incredible unit. As far as just on paper, it had the highest HP times DPS over cost of any Protoss unit. So it had incredible DPS versus its cost and its health. The build time, I think, is one of the biggest issues with the carrier. I mean, those things just take forever to get out of the Stargate, and it's very difficult to build up a carrier army.
Go ahead, Greg.
I was just going to say, it's very situational and hard to switch around because it is such an investment to get that infrastructure up. Like, if you actually want to turn out carriers, you got to put up 4 or 6 Stargates. You do that, that's a big investment into one thing that's also very hard counterable. Like, if your opponent's banking in the time that you're building up the carriers, then all of a sudden they have a round of corruptors out. All that's gone. And then it's easier for them to remax again. So,
yeah, that's a good point.
There's just lots of situational problems with the unit.
That's a great
and the
point.
And the corrupt lens of Brood War tech anyways.
Yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, Zerg at any point is going to have a spire, an X amount of larva banked up, so carriers hit the field. bunch of corruptors come out, you can pick the carriers off, and then Terran generally at that point in the game will have one, maybe two starports already with reactors, so they have the potential for quad Viking production immediately. And if they scan your stargates or if they see the first carrier or anything like that, and it's not a complete surprise, they can add two more starports, get two more reactors, and then they have octo Viking production. And, you know, you can't match that with Protoss with the build time of carriers and the expense.
Let me ask you guys this. So what is the most devastating cheese that's been done to you?
Oof. For me, certainly early Marine Warhound pushes. And, you know, you guys were kind of talking about how Warhounds, you can just A-move in the late game and stuff. But what I've found in my experience against really good players in Heart of the Swarm, the Warhound isn't a great unit to be the main composition of your army. It's actually not that great at all. Pure bio from Terran absolutely wrecks Warhounds. Zerg Warhounds don't really have that much of a place, but I feel like in the early game, they're incredibly powerful against all three races. If you do a Marine Warhound timing push and you pull about 8 SCVs to repair the Warhounds, and that's another thing about the Warhound that I'll say might be a little bit imbalanced, is that the size of the Warhound model allows at least 6 to 8 SCVs to get a full repair on it. And that amount of hit point regeneration that early on in the game when you're dealing with small quantity of units is incredibly, incredibly powerful.
Idra, cheese?
I haven't actually met anything that was too, like, incredible. I'm not the most creative thing that I've played against personally. White Raw rushed for an Oracle and a Mothership Core. He charged the Oracle, so I got two entombs off immediately. And then he just went straight to Tempest. I think it was like 2 or 3 star off of it. And just, like, masked up Tempest and tried to use the Oracle for vision. But I was going Hydras, and it's just, like, just not that good.
It did.
That was creative.
Yeah.
The thing that I'm, like, most afraid of right now is Marauder Battle Hellion. Like, a Marauder Battle Hellion rush. Instead of a Hellion Marauder all-in, you have Battle Hellion. So that seems like it would be really scary. But I haven't actually had anyone do that to me yet.
That's actually a really good idea.
Yeah, I saw a video, or DeMuslim was watching a video and I saw it, of a Protoss against the STC, where he actually proxied a Nexus, got a Mothership Core out of it, next to STC's base, then waited for the energy to charge up, and then he mass recalled from the, like, he just flew the little Mothership Core into the base and recalled his entire army into STC's base.
That is so silly, really, though.
Yeah, it is, but it's
shut up, in control, you want to try it,
Jeff's
it's
right,
like
though,
the but. One... 20 proxy times it would Nexus. Ever fucking work.
Yeah,
you know, ask you to say the phrase proxy Nexus as like part of a strategy. That's enough.
I know you want to try it.
Proxy Nexus, get the Mothership Core out, and then at minute 18, you get to go ahead and recall into their base. Like,
I'm with Idra on the Battle Hellion Marauder thing, man.
That scares me, and I haven't even seen it yet.
Scares me too.
My answer is really boring and then kind of complaining. It's just the close positions. Avila just did a two racks, one factory, Warhound Marine. Just kind of walked him across the map. And
that's exactly what I was saying.
It's really scary because I was like fighting for my life the entire time, like barely surviving. But I then held it off and I was like, sweet, I'm in good shape. But he had like 5 bases and just 20 racks and just made pure Marines. I was like, oh, never mind.
Yeah.
I was dying the whole time. It's close positions. That shit can't happen anymore, Blizzard. Come on.
Close positions. And that's a good segue over to the next thing. Idra, let's get your thoughts first. The new maps that we see, which it was honestly, you know, there's a lot of disappointing things that happen in life. But one of the most disappointing as of late was just not even getting a chance to play with the new units on the existing maps, at least not in the beta itself. And
you can't have a ladder, but I think there is some way. I don't actually know how myself.
There's probably some hack that you can, but...
I observed a couple of the Rude guys playing on Daybreak, like actual Heart of the Swarm on Daybreak, but I forget how they did it.
Okay.
Can somehow, but yeah, the ladder maps, I don't know, they're better than the Wings of Liberty beta maps. I mean, there is that. Blizzard has learned a little bit, but I really wish they would just either port the tournament Brood War or tournament Wings of Liberty maps, or just outsource, like have some of the community map makers do it, because they really understand things a lot better. Like, we still have a map with a gigantic backdoor. It's like playing on fucking Zelnaga again. It's just like that doesn't work in competitive play. Like, you
and
can't.
And we all know how awesome that map was.
Yeah. Right.
Right.
Well, like, there's a couple things. They're introducing new tile sets. They want to get their destructible rocks out there. It's the beta. I understand that. My problem is, sometimes with the way Blizzard does things, I feel like we're not dealing with like a world power fucking $1 billion company that owns everything. I feel like we're dealing with like a local developer sometimes on some things, because they could go and send an email to Diamond or a few of these guys that make maps or head groups that make maps and say, hey, we're not going to pay you anything, but the mere fact that I'm giving you this email is making your schlong go like this right
now. We'll put your name on this and everyone will see it. And
we want you to make maps with these tile sets. They need to be competitive, and we're going to give you, we'll put your name in the credit, you know, like on the side of fucking battle and say, made by Diamond, and Diamond. But instead,
you know,
hang on, pain user. Jesus fucking Christ, hang on. Or you could do what they're doing right now, which is give an intern 25 minutes to throw together a map that's completely fucking imbalanced. And then they have to balance the game around these broken maps that, like, maybe we're fixing the balance now only to find out later that some of the stuff was great on a big map. What if the Tempest is the best fucking thing ever to happen on a giant map? I wouldn't know because I'm playing it on Steps of War right now.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, and that said, when I was gonna chime in there, I was just saying, and why not pay them? I mean, grab some of those great community map makers, hire them.
Because they give the tools, man. Like, I'm serious. Like, I think that's actually the reason. It's like, we make the game, we give you the tools. Now, it doesn't really solve the problem of still having shitty maps, but
it doesn't incentivize the top-level map makers to really...
But they do it anyway. Like, it's just completely unnecessary. Like, they just have to ask them, and they'll do it happily.
Yeah.
Well, they should. I mean,
when Blizzard emails people, they do things, by the way, if anyone's ever had that experience. Like, hey, this is so-and-so from Blizzard. We'd just like to. And I'm just going, yes. I'm already typing, like, yes, what is it? What? Yes? You want Barrison? Oh, well, all right. I mean, I guess you can have him. It's fucking Blizzard asking me for Barrison.
It is like an awkward consideration. And a lot of people do have good points when they say, how can you balance something if you're trying to do it on, like, kind of crappy maps, right?
Yeah, it's a huge issue. It really is.
It's like compare gameplay.
Marauder Hellion was broken. It was absolutely broken. You killed a Zerg 98% of the time with Marauder Hellion, and that other 2% was just that they kind of survived only to die to the next attack.
Well, compare gameplay on Steps of War to any modern map. Like, look at the difference between how you play on Steps of War and Metropolis. It's a totally different game. You can't balance on one and expect it to matter for the other.
Well, we're gonna see some pretty crazy stuff. Because we're running all the new maps in the PhD tournament tonight, and I think they're going to be exploited to their fullest. So I think a lot of the points that we're talking about are really, really, really going to be highlighted tonight.
One point is the new collapsible destructible rocks. I think that's actually a pretty cool feature that it has good potential applications. I kind of like that.
I was actually just watching that Destiny video where he defends his base with some collapsible rocks.
Dude.
What do you guys think about this double? I mean, you said you liked them, Indra.
I think it's interesting.
I mean, to be able to, like, drop your rocks to defend a third or drop someone's rocks to basically interrupt an expansion does seem cool. But, you know, does that mean on the next expansion we're going to have, like, fucking, you know, who knows what kind of
avalanches,
shit?
Man.
A big meteor that you blow up with air units and then it, like, shoots rocks everywhere and
spawn
hits
quicksand
ramps
pit.
And fucking all sorts of stuff. I don't know. What do you think, Greg? Or what do you think, Jeff? Do you like?
Avalanches, yeah. In Legacy of the Void, I think you can destroy some rocks on one corner of the map and they will roll across the map and gather, like, size and speed. I'll hit shit.
They need to put a giant Snarlacc pit in the middle of one of the maps.
It's but, Starlack Pit. God. Pain user.
Yeah, that was like a cross between Starlack. A Pokemon and a fucking
Snorlax.
Bad guy.
Imagine a pit with a Snorlax.
Return of the Jedi.
Come on down. It's really comfy down here.
It's a Snorlax pit. All right,
it's a Snorlax pit.
All right, let's see. I want to.
The alternate ending in Star Wars, like Boba Fett gets knocked in there and just falls asleep cutely.
Yeah. Lando's like.
Now, when you have the collapsible rocks at the expansion and you like drop it on top of a Nexus, does it actually kill it or does it just damage?
No, 500 damage.
I haven't actually seen. Oh, it does true damage.
It does 500 true damage.
You know what's funny about that though? When do you attack the rocks and not the Nexus?
Well, yeah,
have enough units.
The rock don't the rocks.
Takes 500 HP. The rocks go down less, real quick.
They have
rocks
less
have 500 HP.
HP.
So if you can deal 500 HP to one.
And they have like no armor. But yeah,
these are the tough decisions you're going to have to make in Heart of the Swarm in Control. Aren't you excited? Fuck.
Here it is. Here's the one scenario where that happens. Okay, it's a TVT or TVX. Terran's sieging the base, but they're like, "Fuck. I just can't reach the X, you know, the town hall." But I can hit the rocks, and then they hit the rocks, and the crowd's going, ah! And then the rocks hit it for 500 damage, and it's like, it was already at 500 health, and then it explodes, and the crowd jumps up, and Dustin Browder just goes,
That being said, while we're on the topic of the rocks, I've found a few interesting uses for them. As Terran on... hold on, I'm not sure what the map is. It doesn't really matter. Do you guys know what I'm talking about? The map with the destructible rocks at the ramp of your natural, where you can fully wall off your natural?
Yeah, that's... Yeah, I don't know the map, but...
Pathodar's anus.
Okay. So, on that map, I found a few really interesting uses, actually. One thing that I like to do is whittle the rocks down and get them really, really low so that they're within a hair's shot of me killing them, and if you see somebody doing some sort of an early push or an all-in, you can actually just instantly kill your rocks and wall that off, and it'll give you time to prepare. You can also
and then you're stuck, but
you're stuck, but you're safe, and you have time to get enough units out, and then you can eventually kill the rocks. You're not permanently stuck.
I know.
Yeah, you can kill the rocks and then get out, and then also you can trap opponents in their base if their army, like, if you work their rocks down and you wait for him to move out of his natural and you
flank way too much about rocks. Is anyone else with me on this? Like,
well, no, I mean, they're part of the game. I think
we're sucking up to Dustin Browder, so
yeah, I just showed that video actually.
Anyway, what I was trying to say is one thing that I've done is if you scout your opponent and early on and you work down his rocks early to within a hair's fracture of dying, you can actually wait for your opponent to move out and then have like two hidden warhounds sneak in, kill his rocks while you have a drop waiting. Then you drop his natural and he's completely blocked off from getting his units back into the natural or his main base and you can just kill it.
If he doesn't realize that you were killing his rocks and then left them with like 5 HP.
Sometimes people don't kill
sick
them.
High level game.
No, seriously, sometimes people don't kill them. Or a lot of people actually work the rocks down to within a hair fracture of dying and leave them on every race. That's what like pretty much everyone's doing right now, just in case they need to kill them to wall off.
You know, just
that's such a massive vulnerability because of that happening. I agree. People actually really do that. Or they shouldn't.
All right, so we've answered most of the questions. We still have a lot to cover. So let me just ask you one more question. If you could make one change for an upcoming patch, what would it be?
Warhounds. It's like...
Right.
Yeah.
Just fucking
as a Zerg player?
Just remove Warhounds.
Just remove them?
Oh, yes. No. Fucking you can't do that to
make
us.
Them require a fusion core or something?
What?
They actually just make everything so much worse. Like, they're so boring and bland and... They are overpowered right now. It's a bad thing.
That's crazy. I'm actually of a totally different opinion, and I'm obviously
that's
biased.
Weird. All right. Well, Pegasus is going
to obviously biased.
He's going to increase their damage by 20%.
No. Seriously,
just
seriously.
As a reminder, Pegasus thinks the Banshee is worse than the Dark Templar.
Dude, we're not even getting into this again.
All right, Payton User, one change you could make for an upcoming patch, what would it be?
One thing I would make for an upcoming patch. First off, I think Protoss needs a core unit that's cool with functionality, whether it's a gateway unit or a robo unit or a Stargate unit. They like
so all your of the change Protoss, is that you're just going to add a new unit.
Yeah, I mean the Protoss literally got nothing that changes their the way that they play, the style that they play. They didn't get anything sure. that alters their unit composition. I guess the Tempest, but I mean, come on, guys, this is Blizzard. Like, you know, some of the most creative minds in the world, some of the best games that have ever been created.
They got fucking David Kim on board. You know,
I mean, you could do something more creative than the Tempest, you know, or give the Tempest. Okay, if I can't introduce a new unit in the next patch, you know, give the Tempest something interesting and unique. Maybe
how about Bloodlust? So like
sure,
the Immortals.
Yeah.
No. Turn really
the Tempest
big.
It's like a new carrier, but instead of launching interceptors, it drops paratrooper zealots that run in and fucking like stab you with little lightsaber knives.
A Sarlacc pit opens up. And
it's the Snorlax pit.
All right. The Snorlax pit. All right. So, I totally get what you're saying, kind of going back to what you were mentioning before. So, like a core Protoss unit. All right.
Absolutely.
One change in an upcoming patch.
Mine? Because, see, Greg, you gotta learn, like, when you're a kid, you play this game, like, if you had three wishes, you gotta metagame that shit. A lot of people pick wishes because they knew other stuff was gonna happen, or they were really clever and the rules weren't set, they'd pick for more wishes. So, the Warhound, not worried about it. That shit's gonna change. They have to. Otherwise, you're gonna see more and, like, TVT is the worst matchup.
I used to have that mindset, and that's why I stayed with Zerg and Wings of Liberty. And then shit didn't get fixed for like a year and a half. So I have no faith. The Warhound needs to be removed. They need to be aware of that.
No, I mean, it really doesn't.
Hey, don't,
guys.
No pain is
come
no, don't dare.
Come on. Get out of here.
My change would be to take the Dark Shrine, the Templar Archives, and the Brood War 5, that shit, combine them into one. You get both Templar and Dark Templar from a Templar Archive.
God.
I'm okay with that. As long as you don't make Colossus.
Okay, well, if that's the case, you have to slow Dark Templar down to Brood War speed instead of Ninja speed.
God, can't use her.
They're fucking fast!
And you have to add 5 armor to the Warhound, Jeff. Are you ready to make that trade?
Am I even arguing? Oh, my God. You guys
this
are
guy, this guy goes,
you guys are ridiculous.
I'm actually, I know it's weird, but I'm of the opinion the Warhound's pretty okay. But can we talk about nerfing that Dark Templar, please?
That is not what I said. It was a hypothetical, but anyway, the Warhound, I personally have, like, you guys are saying it's this bland, boring, retarded unit, it's way too overpowered. It's the micro with the Warhound is actually really fun and engaging. You're constantly controlling them, you're kiting them in different directions. You can do a lot of really cool medevac micro with them.
Engaging, like Play School does StarCraft, like, look, kids, if you walk backwards and shoot with your obscenely long-range, high-damage output unit, it'll kill stuff really easily. And look, it's easy. You can just keep moving it backwards and shooting.
Killing stuff really easily is fun.
And,
and I think that, you know, instead of game development now has this, like, philosophy of the way that they want you to play the game. Blowing shit up with long-range rockets and having mechanical units that run fast is cool. It's fun. Instead of nerfing everything, I think that they should start to buff other things and make them more interesting in respect to that. Because
it's okay.
You love Command & Conquer.
It's okay that the Warhound is really strong.
I love Command & Conquer.
I know.
As long as all races have stuff that's equally strong, that's fine. But the thing is, like, Vipers are ridiculously powerful. But they're also difficult to use. There's a lot of things that go in there. There's decision
and expensive.
Yeah. There's, like, they're difficult, but if you do it really well, then they're awesome. And that's what everything should be. That's what made Brood War so great. It makes
and
a lot of things for it.
Have you
right
guys
now,
seen,
like, right now, no 2 supply for Warhound, 2 supply, 150 minerals, no armory. Like, they're one of the easiest units to make, and they're not expensive. Like, it's insane.
You can do simple control to make them better, but they're already really good, and the control is just, like, it's basic ranged unit micro. It's not anything particularly amazing or difficult to do.
I mean, the same can be said about every ranged unit in StarCraft 2. Stalkers, I mean, roaches,
just make roaches or you just make stalkers, you get run over. If you just make mech or just make warhounds,
you can also get run over.
You only lose tanks.
Okay, Warhounds.
Oh yeah, where is that Warhound video? That looks fucking awesome. I mean, they reduced the speed since then.
The fun micro in that video.
They dropped
it. No. Okay. But that video displays like the worst possible scenario. There's no question about it.
You're right. There's some pretty shitty like micro attempts in there.
Warhounds absolutely destroy stalkers. There's no question about it. I'm not going to argue that. But that said, using Warhounds as your primary unit composition does not work against Zerg, and it does not work against Terran, period. Mass Bio absolutely destroys Warhounds, and from Zerg, Roach Hydra combinations with Swarm Hosts and Vipers absolutely destroys Warhound compositions. That can't be argued.
Pure
against
Warhound,
Protoss,
sure. But Warhound with support is just fine versus it. And nothing about a Terran army is particularly difficult to use now. Like, if you compare using a big bio army with Ghost and Viking support and whatnot in Wings of Liberty to using a Hots mech army, like a mech army with Warhounds, it's just like it's incredibly simple. You don't even have to turtle anymore. You just make a bunch of shit and you go attack. And you
I totally agree with you, Greg, but from the standpoint of a player who is not Tasia and does not have that kind of control, it's very, very difficult for the below pro level players to execute
That's
any
the
of those.
Point. That's how it's supposed to be. That's what makes
okay,
it.
Okay, I agree, but when's the last time you saw Blizzard base their changes off of
what they did with Zerg. Like, Zerg got a bunch of stuff that's really difficult to use,
Oracle.
But can be really, really good.
They tried with the Oracle. They failed at that.
They tried with Protoss, too. They just didn't do it very well. But Terran, they introduced an A-move unit. Like, they introduced boring shit.
I'm not letting you guys take my Warhound.
This is my favorite one, by the way. This is in this video, this is my favorite one. After the Warhounds completely fucking eat the roaches alive, then they go in with 100 supply Warhounds and 100 supply Banelings. Maybe it's more than that, but the Banelings actually win. It's pretty hilarious. There we go.
Banelings are funny. That reminds me of the game, I think it was Nesty versus SC or whatever, where you just made Mass Baneling versus Mass Thorn and actually
worked. Yeah, and it actually worked.
They can be really surprising at times.
Yeah. Uh-huh. All right.
Yeah, man, Moon has been using Banelings a lot recently.
Who?
In almost Moon?
Yeah.
He's been using
Banelings. He has to make up, actually, for that really fucking terabad Baneling explosion from way back in the day. I'm sure if I look up Baneling fail, it would still come up.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Let's talk about some of the other items that we had down on the show topics. Let's see. So the Blizzard WCS EU Finals is this weekend. The brackets appear to show. And, I mean, this is awesome. This is one of these events that I really, really regret not being able to go to. And you're shaking your head, in control. Because, I mean, I look at this list and it's like, holy shit, unbelievable. Yeah. Here's the official tournament bracket that you can see. I mean, you've got...
Can you link us as well?
I don't have it in the thing.
It's all good.
Sorry.
I'll find it.
The bane of using multiple Skypes. What do you guys think this weekend? I mean, it's kind of cool to see the WCS really starting to form together, even though we've seen it the last two MLGs and it's been going on and they've had all the national qualifiers. Like, now it's the real deal. People winning their trips to China. Greg, you just won recently. So as someone who's going over there compete, Greg, are you going to be paying close attention to this tournament this weekend?
I'll be watching it, certainly. We got two players in there. We got Ben and Stefano. I think that's it. Two?
Thor Zane, Mang.
Oh, yeah, and Thor Zane. So that's going to be really exciting just as their teammates to see what they can do. And it's a ton of great players. Like, lots and lots of good players. Really fun to watch Nurcio. Not sure who else. Slivko, I like his play a lot. So just like from a watching StarCraft 2 standpoint, definitely. And then three of them are already through, and then another six go on to China.
Right.
So watching them to see who I'm going to be playing against and all that's exciting as well. And WCS is just, like, it's a gigantic thing. It's the European finals for Blizzard's tournament. That's a really big thing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it should be a lot of fun to watch. I just hope that everything is good. It's a good show.
And if you haven't seen the arena, I believe it's on the front page of StarCraft Reddit as well. And this is not, obviously, a StarCraft... this is not obviously a StarCraft crowd, but this is the arena that it's going to be in. If that thing fills up, fucking more power to those guys, man. That would be insanely awesome.
Yeah. Dude, that is one thing that I can say about the Blizzard WCS in Australia. The venue was just absolutely amazing, and it's so cool. They had this sort of concert hall-like venue. You guys saw the International, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
And I think Jeff like mentioned. That. I think Jeff mentioned how cool it was that they had the like private team sponsor booths up on the high rise.
Right.
So at the WCS in Australia, they had all these really, really well done, like sort of 3D dimensional, almost like herald banners, that like roll down banners from each player. So each player was like holding his own pose and it had his name, and all the pictures of the players were lining both sides of the hallway as they made their intros. And it was just like really, really cool little things like that. The lighting was great. The production was great. So, I mean, sky's the limit, man. I think the WCS is really coming along.
This will be like the first big standalone thing they've done. The first continental. Well, I mean, I guess they did SEA, but Europe's quite a bit bigger than that. Since NA was just kind of a sideshow to MLG Raleigh, but this is going to be a standalone thing. It's going to be put on by DreamHack, who has a lot of experience with, you know, just running events and stuff. I'm really excited to see what they do with it.
Jeff, what do you think? WCS Europe, obviously some huge names, some already advancing on, already going, but big implications either way.
I think it's interesting. I don't know. I don't want to make it negative because I feel like the International got a lot of attention, but one of the first things that everyone did was they were like, look, Blizzard, this is what you need to do. And I think people just kind of forgot how good of a job that Blizzard's been doing with WCS. Definitely a different format. So I'm kind of excited for this reminder because, in particular, the DreamHack crew does an amazing job. There's no
Absolutely.
Question about the level of productivity or the production they're going to put on. It's going to be phenomenal. Yeah. The casters are fantastic. They held no bars back. I mean, it's Apollo and it's Tastosis, if I'm not mistaken, and Red Eye as host. Like, this is...
Yep.
This is some of the sickest shit you'll ever see. And in terms of players, there's really only a few players in there that you would call, like, underdogs. But even those guys are just underrated Europeans that don't get any attention at all. Like an Eel, a very good Zerg player for France. I think it's going to be an amazing show. And then selfishly, as Greg was saying, cheering on teammates, we've got three horses in there, and only Stefano and Thorzane share a bracket, I think. Well,
yeah,
I say only, but that's like two out of our three guys. But... there's a really good chance that we're going to see some awesome games. The Muslim Mana first up. Mana is on paper, you would say, especially with PvT, the better player there. But the Muslim lately has been absolutely on fire and has lots of confidence in TVP. And then Thorzane Nidan, exciting match. And Stefano is obviously, I would say, the favorite going into that. And he already has a seat into China, so he's just trying to make more money for himself. So it's a really cool tournament. I'm really excited about it.
Yep.
Awesome. I'm excited for it as well. Of course, it's going to be on this weekend, pretty much all weekend long. And you can head on over to the Liquipedia StarCraft section or the official Blizzard site and follow along with that. But definitely a tournament to be checking out this weekend. The Evil Geniuses Masters Cup Season 8 resumes. Of course, it hits close to home here. I've done like this, you know, like five Masters Cups.
Yeah, man.
I think maybe even more is we did a Quake 3 and a Counter-Strike 1 like way back in the day. But in control, you are kind of taking the reins for this season, and you already had your first match last night, EG versus Root. But the team leagues, they're popular, even in season, I believe, 6 when the 2v2 existed. May not have been the most exciting thing, but tell us a little bit about Season 8 and what you're excited for coming out of it.
Well, we're going to do Season 8 and 9 before the year ends, and there's not a lot of time left. So that means for you guys, the viewers, there's going to be a lot of great StarCraft coming. Really excited. Raid Call has been pushing, you know, more and more StarCraft 2, and they're doing it in a big way, being the title sponsor for this league as well. It's fun casting with Azale, and I think it's really fresh for everyone else because Azale's not a really, really traveled StarCraft 2 commentator. He did the GESL, and that's about it, and he does Masters Cup. So it's kind of cool showing off the talent that EG has. Like, he's captain of the WoW squad, but he's a great commentator for StarCraft 2 as well.
Yeah, he's a great caster. I had the opportunity to cast the Fnatic EG show match with him the other day, and it was really, really enjoyable. And for someone that's a WoW pro, that I'm sure gets a lot of flack from people for, you know, not understanding the game and probably doesn't know
it. Flack at all.
Yeah, he is actually, he has more and a higher percent of positive feedback than any other caster I've ever seen.
He does.
Like, even Tastosis. it's kind of ridiculous. I don't really understand.
I would have made the same assumption you did, Taylor.
That's what makes it so surprising.
It was just an assumption on my part. Like, that's what I would assume if I hadn't actually known a WoW player, didn't play professionally. But having casted with him, and personally, this is my favorite sort of caster setup, is if you're with another caster that actually has a deep understanding of the game, and you can both just really vibe off of one another, you can build off of each other's ideas, you can really provide entertaining content for the fans, and I think he's an excellent caster. I had a really good time casting with him. It was fun.
Yeah, so I think I'm excited because I really do enjoy casting, and usually I make appearances like once a month, or even, you know, sometimes there's a lull there, but I get a thrill out of doing it. So
yep.
I have to be careful what I wish for, because this is like 6 nights a week, and I think I'm doing the majority of that. So it's actually going to go from like not casting that much to, hey guys, Jeff, I'm casting all the fucking time. So
you're going to get sick of me.
Yeah.
Yep. What?
I was saying Jeff.
Oh, what about?
But he didn't say anything.
Oh, Jeff. Payne's calling you.
Oh, what's up? Do you still get the? I always get this, like, the watching a match, or maybe if EG's playing or something like that, and you're just like, damn, I wish I was in there right now.
No, because we're actually in so many team leagues right now with IPTL, ESEA, EGM, CSL, and then I think NESL is having their team league startup.
Yeah.
Maybe in a little while. I can't remember. There's another one as well, but I actually get a lot of opportunities to play. And I don't know. I'm part of the... Even if I'm not in draw, I was one of the guys that helped them prepare for their matches and talked about their opponents and stuff. So I feel involved anyways.
For sure. So you're also helping out, like, not only as captain, like also in a little bit of a coaching regard too?
Very little. I mean, it's when people call us like the Yankees, they're one of the things about that kind of that stereotype is that each guy kind of got to where they did by mostly getting themselves there. So you don't like take over their life and tell them how to play StarCraft, but this happens back and forth. If like Greg's playing somebody that I know a lot about, I'll go over and talk to him about how they play and what tendencies that he should look for, and that helps him cultivate his style and build around that.
Absolutely.
It's more of like a collective thing. Everyone watches and plays a ton of StarCraft, so just whenever we can help each other out, we do so.
That's the best way to do it.
In sort of the worst-kept secret in esports history, Stefano has now officially joined EG. If you haven't already, you need to watch the Geniuses Falling documentary. We mentioned it earlier, but it's pretty much kind of the announcement, if you will. And I think people were expecting their own sort of, you know, like a EG-based fanfare. But it had been built up so much already. I think you guys nailed it, Jeff, with the documentary.
And well, like,
go ahead.
I was just gonna say anybody who watches Inside the Game has got to see Stefano walking around in his shorts behind a drill all the time. So it's like we saw both. If you follow Inside the Game, you would have seen both of Stefano's trips to the EG house, how long he had been there, the fact that he was living there. I mean, it's you got to be able to put two and two together. I think a large portion of the community knew.
The first time was just like an honest visit between
we're all friends
with them. And he was still on contract with Millennium. They knew about it and they were fine. But yeah.
Yeah, right.
It wasn't particularly well hit.
They're all sweating bullets back at the office. Like, oh, God.
Well, they knew they weren't going to be able to hold on to him. I mean, he's, like, world-class caliber talent. You have to have lots of money to hold on to that. That's just, like, the way things work.
Not only is he world-class talent, he is absolutely clutch in offline events when he needs to perform.
In anything. Like,
Yeah.
If he wants to win, he wins.
Yep.
He doesn't feel pressure. It's kind of insane.
NASL is cool. Kicking back. Sorry.
Yeah.
You're right. Sorry. I'm the asshole here. I'm definitely the fucking asshole here.
Just a quick word on the video, I guess. God damn it, pain user.
God damn it.
We're really, really lucky. Like, part of the advantage of EG is that they're able to put really good people in the right places to do things. And, yeah, it's nice to make videos, introduce players, but to make it at such a level that it's kind of it goes a little bit viral, like people share it, they're excited to show people what the community produces, and it gets attention. Like, we keep getting emails and like people are like, hey, look where this popped up, and it's completely unrelated to StarCraft 2. We're only able to do that because we have live-in, full-time, dedicated, and talented content-producing people. And Conrad, Sean, Anna, they're our content team, and they're led up by Colin. And those are names and words you guys probably don't hear very often, but they actually worked like 72 hours to make that video as perfect as it possibly could. And by the way, they worked like the last few hours alongside Alex, and Alex Garfield actually has the most stupidly high standards for things that you can't even, in order for me to tell you how high of standards they are, I'd probably get in trouble because they're kind of embarrassing stories for Alex. I'll tell one and he can yell at me about this.
It's perfect timing because I just put your GIF up in control of you shaking your head. It's perfect. It couldn't come better.
I was doing an interview at Home Story Cup, and MC ran like 100 yards across a parking lot and handed me a Capri Sun and then ran away. And I got in trouble for like the 3 seconds that I was holding the Capri Sun on camera because I was just so baffled by fucking MC running over and handing me this random juice box and then running away. But to Alex Garfield, you know, we're a monster. You cannot be holding another drink on camera. So that level of standard, that expectation permeates throughout everything we do. And for them to be able to work as hard as they did to make that video is absolutely amazing. So obviously, like, a lot of credit goes to the players for being funny, but the thing was written by our content team. The actual script itself, I think, was written by Anna, but in conjunction with everybody else. And I added a few things in there, but we're just really lucky to have such a complete team. Like, it was no one person's effort. It was an entire squad of people.
Yeah, it's actually like the best part about being on GEG. They just put us and do so much for us to look good. Like they actually just hand us a script and we sit down and do a few takes and then they do all this editing shit. And then this really, really funny, awesome thing that everyone wants to watch comes out and makes us look like ballers. It's actually the best part about being on GEG. It's really cool.
Oh, man, that makes me so jealous. Because I am absolutely terrible at script writing, and that's something they tried to get us into at IGN, and we're sitting here writing our own scripts for shows, and I'm just like, nope. It's not really my cup of tea.
Yeah,
not really my cup of tea at all.
So NASL season 4 schedule has been unveiled, and here it comes. I mean, let me be honest, guys. Like, this kind of hit me from out of nowhere, I guess. I mean, you guys are players, so I don't know if you're participating in the NASL, but honestly, this was a little bit surprising to me. I guess I just have been watching other stuff or keeping up with other stuff, but it is here. Roster's been revealed. Obviously, the season's been revealed as well. I'm trying to find the leak the link for that because it begins tomorrow night, if I'm not mistaken.
Can I tell you what I'm most excited about, Marcus?
Yeah, sure.
I am most excited about a cold war that is happening, an arms race, if you will. In one corner, you have Lauren Elise, the Dairy Queen, someone that, if you have Google, you could see what her nipples look like. Mm. And then on the other side, you have Lindsay Spohr, the most excellent host to do one gig and then disappear for a year. They have both surfaced. They're both here. They are vying for, the market, as it were, and we are all going to be victim of their show.
Wait, are they actually both working on it this season? Are they both doing stuff?
No, I don't know. I was mostly making a joke. I think Lindsay Spohr is like...
That's too bad. That would have been funny. They have like cat
wanted,
on there.
She wanted help with streaming, and she posted on Facebook, and then Destiny was one of the guys that responded.
Destiny, man. He cultivates all the female personalities
in
streamers.
I mean, you know, hey, send me some pics, and I'll hook you up, man. It's
right? Oh, man.
He needs a new outlet.
He needs a new outfit.
So it kicks off tomorrow. It's pretty much all of the details that you would expect to see or know with returning players coming in, getting in on your HD pass, which is like $15 or $16 for the season. And if you, I think if you sign up now, otherwise it's like $20. So you subscribe now. They're apparently working on a lot more stuff, because that's the other cool thing about this, whether it be Masters Cup, whether it be IPL or NASL, everyone's trying to like push that production to the next level. You know, we talked a little bit about even what Riot was doing with the, bigger mini maps that were, you know, accessible to the crowd. Like, I love that. I'd love to see more people push in that direction. So I'm just excited to see what they're going to have this year, because so far, like NASL past season one, they've been improving their product. So
they have like a swagger to them now, which I'm so excited to see. Yep. Like they have confidence to try stuff that on like that mining with the pros, if someone would have ran that over my desk, I'd be like, this is really dumb, but they have the balls to execute that and people love it. And
it's actually hilarious.
Yeah. They're doing more stuff like that. And we couldn't do that in season one, because we were like the beaten, you know, like wounded stepchild. Like if we tried something stupid, everyone would be like, oh, you can't even run a show and yet you're trying this weird stuff. Like they now have the luxury to do that.
Yeah, and then also, I mean, the whole Korean debacle just really, really hurt NASL. I mean, that sucked.
Yeah,
for sure.
And I mean, now everyone's pretty much forgotten about it. And so everyone thought, oh, this might be the demise, but like honestly, look at the success of a lot of the tournaments that you know. I mean, this weekend I think will still be an incredibly watched event.
Definitely.
Despite the fact that there won't hold on. Mini wheat, don't hang on your debt. If that thing falls on you, what do you want me to do? I don't want that to happen. Sorry. It's like the one thing he hangs on his desk, and I just have this fear as the father, just like the desk because there's like a printer, and it's like, yeah. And he's just like being all monkeyed on it. Like he's a crazy guy. Sorry about that. Where were we at? Sorry. Mini wheat.
NASL.
IPTL has started up. In fact, I think in
right
some
now?
Strange sort of StarCraft 2ception. Yes. Isn't EG playing Team Liquid at this very moment? Right this moment.
Dude, and I'm going to be working on that again.
All right. You're going to be casting IPL again?
Yep. We had our first day last week, and then we're doing two additional days this week, kind of filling in for, well, Doa was originally going to go to Korea and cast with Moltrap, I believe, but he had some serious health problems. I think his gallbladder burst, and he ended up having to get emergency surgery and had to move out of his place and stuff, so I'm actually going to give him a call and figure out where he's at right now, because I haven't really heard anything, but he's a really good guy. So yeah, we're kind of filling in that void, and they do need some extra casting. So I mean, me and HD are local, and we're going to be hopping back on board with that, and hopefully IPL5 as well in Vegas. So pretty excited about that.
Well, it started tonight, the IPTL, along with League of Legends. They're running that side by side. But I'm sure that everyone watching the show doesn't care about that and just wants to know when the StarCraft is on. So you can just head on over. They've got the schedule on the front page, and it looks good.
Last Shadow, man. What are you talking about, Wheat? Last Shadow, man. Next what? League of Legends pro, dude.
What, you?
No, Last Shadow's trying to become a professional League of Legends player.
I did see that he's been playing.
He basically quit the best game ever created and conceptualized to play quite possibly... Not
well,
my favorite.
We won't go into. Yeah, we won't
go into. I just think it's interesting.
And
it's an interesting life decision.
GSL has kind of been going in full force.
Absolutely.
As we've seen some great groups been played, but more notably, a couple of foreigners as the Foreigner Hope continues to try to try to make it through. Coming up, we've got, I believe, the finish of the Korean National Finals and then Group G with Nesty Life, who is just, of course, in the TSL 4 Finals, and JYP and Supernova will be facing off.
Tonight?
What's that?
Is that tonight?
Yeah, that's tonight, man.
Oh, damn.
Yeah, go with JYP, sexiest voice in StarCraft 2 history.
Best hugger, too.
What's that?
He's a very good hugger.
Yeah, well, that too.
Well, he's so big, he could just, like, envelop you.
Mm-hmm. We saw Mana play in the group with Tasia, MMA, and MVP. And then we saw Naniwa versus Heart, Sniper, and Squirtle. cover your ears, earmuffs, spoiler earmuffs, because Mama and Naniwa did not advance.
Oh, Naniwa had such a rough man.
I have he not got, watched those games yet. I don't know.
He got one based every game.
Played Heart, man.
Yeah, fucking Heart. Yeah, Heart. And got one based every game, and it was like close, but I mean, just God, Heart's just like, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Just every game, man.
That's how he plays.
Ugh.
But part of the Back to the Future turn.
Yeah, the Back to the
Future. Well, part of it's because he's playing Naniwa. I think the Koreans are kind of starting to figure out that you cheese him, and he tends to play really greedy, so it doesn't work out too well for him.
Yeah. But this is obviously the part of the tournament where I really like. I think I'm paying more attention to the tournament at this point, trying to go through all the groups. GompTV.net, you know where to find that. But games have been good. Production value, as always, fucking phenomenal. I love their map intros, dude. Like, no one does it better than those guys over there. And God, I keep watching. It's something to be said about a lot of other competitions out there.
Absolutely.
And I guess rounding off before we open up the phone lines, Heart of the Swarm Cups, we've got Take TV hosting one of their upcoming tournaments. I believe that Suppy, wait, who is playing in that one? That
Suppy to Muslim.
What's that? Suppy to Muslim.
Suppy to Muslim, Cats, Destiny. Oh, no, excuse me. That's
Kawaira.
What are you guys talking about? You're like, Take TVs.
They are.
I know they are.
Did I just say the wrong?
I just wasn't
paying attention.
For HDs. The European one has Idra.
Me and Bryce. Me and Machine are in it.
I'm not sure if the other
HDs.
That's right. Here it is.
I think that's it.
The player list is up.
Here it is. And when does it start?
Tomorrow at, like, 16 CEST, I think. Very early.
Very early. Oh, you're going to have to get up.
Yeah, it's at, like, 7 a.m. for us.
There it is. Okay, Dark Force, Namango, Chef, 4GG, blah, 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 blah. Going down. Idra Machine playing. Rotterdam, Kara, Braddock, White Raw. This should be good. I see a lot
it'll
of names
fun to see It'll be fun to see Rotterdam play, given he's mostly a caster now.
Oh, is he playing? Oh, God.
He's playing.
He's so cheesy.
I've been seeing Sheth grind out a bunch of games, White Raw grinding out a bunch of games on stream. Idra, have you been streaming?
Yeah, I've streamed quite a bit of it.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
I've been caught during your time. And that's about it as far as what I've seen. But so this is going on. And then we also have the other Heart of the Swarm competition that's going on, which is the one that you are doing, the PhD, the Beta Invitational 1. And that starts tonight after the show, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, yeah, man. I mean, do you want to talk about it? Or?
No, I thought we'd just, you know.
Any questions?
Well, you're casting, why don't you tell us about it, Mr. Hostmaster? Well, you're doing it, so why don't you tell us about it?
Well, basically, me and HD were on the way into the IGN office last week, and he was like, dude, let's run an HDH beta invitational for Heart of the Swarm. And I was like, sounds like a good idea. So I have been working my ass off for the last 5 days putting this thing together. It literally was an idea last week. You know, I got in touch with my friends from Twitch, Kevin, great guy, easy to work with, got in touch with Walter from Astro. Huge thanks to Twitch and Astro for putting this together on such short notice. I mean, this whole thing just got pulled together very, very quickly, and it all came together. Really excited for it. We wanted to be the first tournament out of the gate. We thought that was really important, just to be the first Heart of the Swarm tournament. We think it's going to be very, very interesting. And I've been playing as much Heart of the Swarm as I possibly can, so I actually know what's going on with the builds and the metagame shifts. And we wanted to get a lot of interesting players. We got some up-and-coming talent, absolutely. We got Kawhi Rice, DeMuslim, Suppy, Illusion, Destiny, Cats, White Raw, and TT1 is actually that final question mark you see there at the box. We were looking at TT1.
Mine shows two question marks.
Okay, so that's Illusion and TT1. Those are the final two players. We'll update that graphic as soon as I finish the show. They actually just finished it. Everything just came together at the last minute. A guy on my stream while I was playing Heart of the Swarm was like, hey, man, I do graphics. Would you like me to do some stuff for you? And I was
How well
sure.
do you think Suppy's going to do?
I think Suppy's going to do very well. The one thing that worries me is that I don't think he's been playing quite as much of the beta as the other guys. I know.
Yeah, as of yesterday, Pain User, you can use this in your broadcast. As of yesterday on Kings of 10, Suppy said he hadn't played a single game.
That lying little sack. I was talking to him, and I was like, look, Suppy, the whole point of this tournament is we don't want players sticking to their Wings of Liberty guns. We really want to showcase.
Oh, he'll showcase it. It'll just probably be the most batshit insane stuff you've ever seen.
Swarm hosts running around.
He said
around.
He was going to grind it. But
going crazy.
Yeah.
But I know everyone, you know, certainly Cats, Destiny, White Rod, DeMuslim have all been streaming a ton. I'm fairly sure Kawhi Rice and Illusion have also both been practicing in secret and possibly in Smurf. You never know. But they've both been playing quite a bit as well. So really excited to see how this pans out. We got some good race distribution. One thing that the players were upset about, and I can totally identify with them on this, is they were a little bit worried about the map pool. But HD and I decided it would be best for the tournament because we are going to just see totally new stuff here. New play styles. We're going to see people abuse the imbalances of the map and just see how poor or good of a job Blizzard really did with it. And personally for me, the most exciting thing is there's $2,000 on the line. So everyone is playing to win, 100%. So I would imagine some of the guys are going to stick to their tried and true Wings of Liberty strats and builds that they know work. They have it down pat. And they're going to try and execute those. And I'm really, really curious to see how those are going to match up against the sort of new hybrid Heart of the Swarm mixed in with Wings of Liberty style builds and just see really which play styles thrive.
Right. None of that really matters because the Muslim's just going to absolutely shit on everyone in it.
Like, oh, you think so?
Oh, there it
infinite
is.
Infinite money on him winning.
There so is. So we have a private channel with all of the players on Skype in the tournament. And DeMuslim goes, "So guys, what's the prize pool breakdown?" And we're like, $1,250, $500, $250. And he's like, "Ah, interesting." And then he said something to another player. Then he said something to another player that I'm not going to say. And then I jokingly said, "Oh, DeMuslim, minus $250 off his prize winnings for unsportsmanlike conduct." And he goes, "Ha! Then I'm only winning $1,000. So DeMuslim quite confident going into it. He's already dropped the gauntlet on all the other players. So we'll have to see if he can back up all that limey smack talk.
All right. I'll be watching to see if DeMuslim can win it. So I'm not going to bet against you, Greg. So sorry.
No money. Totally forgot. For those of you who do want to tune in, we're going to be going live after Inside the Game. As soon as I finish up the show, we're going to go prep HD's studio, and then we are going live at 7 p.m. PST tonight. It's going to be best of three all the way up to the semifinals and finals, and we will be broadcasting every single match live. I am anticipating some hiccups here and there because it's live. It's obviously very difficult to do live production, players joining and leaving games. There will be some downtime, but we're going to try and get all the games casted for you guys. And then tomorrow, Wednesday, 4 p.m. PST, we're going to do the semifinals and the finals. So I really hope everybody checks it out. We're super excited for this. And, you know, we're hoping to turn it into something we can do again in the future and something that's sustainable because Twitch and Astro are both local companies to us here in San Francisco, and they're really interested in promoting esports, obviously Twitch, but Astro as well in promoting esports and promoting community-driven projects like this tournament. So hope you guys all check it out, and I really look forward to casting these games tonight.
All right. Well, we have a little bit of time because obviously Masters Cup, you've got to go get ready too. So I know that a lot of people want us to open up the phone lines, talk a little bit more about Heart of the Swarm, and really anything that we've actually been talking about tonight. I'm sure Goatlust is going to have
a good
he can just add something that'll be good, I think. So let's open this up. You can Skype me, DJ Weed, or telephone 909-581-8519. We'll see what actually comes in tonight, fellas. So thanks to everyone who tuned in tonight. Big shout out to our sponsors, Steel Series, Monster Energy, and Kingston HyperX. Don't forget, you can follow the show on Twitter. It's at ITG_SC2 because some dickwad took Inside the Game already. So just letting you know. And you know what? I'm going to take our first call from Clutch. Hello, Clutch.
Yeah.
Welcome
to
the game.
Oh, Mr. Clutch. Good to have you, man.
Thank you. Thank you. My question is regarding Heart of the Swarm. Obviously, it's a big topic here. We're starting to see the decline of the season. Off-season will be around the holidays. Do you feel there needs to be a set date agreed upon for all the tournaments, be it at the end of this year or next year, whenever Heart of the Swarm officially comes out? Or is it going to be kind of a natural evolution? This one tournament's going to say, okay, we're going to do Heart of the Swarm now. This other tournament's going to follow suit. Or is it a decision that Blizzard should make, saying every tournament now has to do Heart of the Swarm?
Well,
everyone's going to do it as soon as they logically can, like as soon as the season's over or whatever. And it's looking like the Heart of the Swarm release is going to line up to come out after everyone finishes their season. So I think the first round of tournaments that starts after release will be Heart of the Swarm, and nobody's going to stick to Wings of Liberty besides little gimmick things.
I mean, hopefully that's what happens, but I really hope it doesn't become this sort of thing where, you know, certain Korean organizations are still using Wings of Liberty, and maybe some tournaments around here are still using Wings of Liberty.
Why would they have any motivation to do that, especially when their players are ultimately behind in Wings of Liberty? It seems to me like it would be the exact opposite, where they would want to just launch towards Heart of the Swarm because at least there's somewhat of
levels the playing field.
Right, it levels the playing field.
Yeah, and for the players, I think that's absolutely – I mean, it's a great question. I think for the players, it's absolutely the most fair thing to do, to have that, you know, set cutoff point where sort of everything transitions over, because, you know, as is even currently, you know, I can speak from personal experience. Everybody's, you know, blowing me up on the Team Liquid forums. I'm getting all these personal messages. Why didn't you get Idra? Why didn't you get Thorzane? All these players that actually couldn't participate in my Heart of the Swarm beta tournament because they're still having to practice Wings of Liberty and they still have focus on Wings of Liberty. So you kind of already see it going into effect. I mean, I had to rework the player roster for this tournament over 100 times. I was ripping my hair out by the end of this thing trying to lock down all these players for tonight. I mean, it was just ridiculous because there's so much content going on right now. There's so much Wings of Liberty stuff. You've got Take.
Clutch, it basically comes down to, I agree, that it's going to have to just be a full transition in the grand scheme of things.
Do you feel there has to be an authoritative figure to say this has to happen, or is it just going to be a community agreement of now is the time?
All the tournaments are just going to want to do it because it's more profitable. Like, that's what people want to watch. It'll be the new exciting thing.
Yeah.
Everyone's just going to do it as soon as they can.
To what you said, Clutch, I think that the best way would be if a head figure was able to make an authoritative statement about it. But I think that if that doesn't happen, then I think we should just rally as a community and just make it happen.
Well, I think we're at a point now of maturity in esports that we can rally together to make it happen, especially if the players want to make it happen. That's what it all comes down to.
Absolutely.
Jeff, any
thanks, gentlemen.
On that? Thanks, Clutch.
My only comment is, Clutch, you're awesome, because I was a little bit thrown off by the fact that you called in, but didn't say, oh, wow, I got through, or hang on, let me turn off the stream. Amazingly coherent question.
All right, let's take it on. We got Matt on the line. Hello, Matt. Welcome to Inside the Game.
Hey, what's up, guys? Thanks for taking my call.
No problem, man.
No problem.
I just got to mute this stream real quick. So my question is, you know, I'm actually really depressed about this Heart of the Swarm release, and everybody always... Well, I'm a Protoss player, first of all. Everybody always says, oh, shut up, Matt. You know, it's a beta. But, you know, I'm really thinking...
Now you know what it feels like.
Yeah, but, you know, like the base units of Protoss, just like how can they improve upon them to really make the game interesting? Like, it just seems like there's nothing there to change.
I mean, did you hear the earlier part of the show where we were sort of talking about it?
But I mean, I did hear the beginning, and it seems like you guys kind of agree, and I kind of hear a depression in Jeff's voice when he's talking about just the. I mean, do you think they really would add a unit?
Well, let's let In Control take this. I mean, obviously, as the Protoss, this one probably hits close to home. And keep it in mind, like the Legacy of the Void, which is so fucking far away, you can't even think about. But the Protoss gets the last hit in the game. So, what do you think, Jeff?
my word of hope to you is that we've been here before. Like, we kind of touched on this, but Wings of Liberty did have rampantly things that just you wouldn't even fathom at this point. You'd look at it and be like, how was that even – how did that leave someone's office? How did that go from one computer to the next where, like, Warp Gate is being upgraded in, what was it, 30 or 40 seconds or something like that? Colossus could move and shoot, and they did almost twice as much damage. Like, we've been here before. In terms of creativity, what we're feeling as Protoss players is jealousy because the Viper and the Swarm Host are off-the-wall awesome units. They're really conceptually cool. They just are really cool. The Vulture Mine, we didn't get that. The Spider Mine, rather. But the Widow is really cool. There's really cool applications for that as well. Detection, mm-hmm. hitting air units, splash damage, but not too mm-hmm. much where it's overpowered. It's early access. There's going to be really cool, like, base blocking things, setting up traps,
yep.
defending counterattacks. That's all cool. It's going to be one supply, by the way. Spoiler alert for anybody that didn't know that.
Thanks.
And things like the Warhound, obviously it needs some work, but it's still... It's an interesting unit. Like, Terran definitely had a lot of multitask in their bio balls. They had a lot of spellcasters. They had a lot of mm-hmm. multitask built into their gameplay. So I think while the Warhound is a simpler unit, it was perhaps needed to be a simpler unit. Another complex unit would make Terran just that much more difficult to play.
Yeah.
But we feel that jealousy because we as Protoss players got a graduated scout that cost a lot of money in the Oracle. It has cool abilities. It's got cool animations. It moves fast. It does make the Stargate tech a little bit more robust, which is exciting in that way. But then the Mothership core, like Mass Recall, very cool power, but it's underhanded by the fact that the core itself is really slow. So it's really only there for the Mass Recall. The Energize, which everyone was like, wow, this is going to make Fourgate super powerful. No, not really, because it's 100 gas in the early portion of the game, and it doesn't do that much. So, I mean, what we're experiencing is we're looking at Zerg. The Zergs, for the first time in StarCraft II, are fucking happy. Like, literally, as a collection, they're happy, they're excitable, mm-hmm. they mm-hmm. like their units. Terrans are winning more now, again, mm-hmm. so they're okay with everything. And then Protoss, we're kind of, we feel like, well, fuck, the Tempest is really dumb, and the Oracle's expensive, and the Mamacore doesn't do that much. So there's not, the motivation's just not quite there. But what I would say is we've been here, and Blizzard will fix this, they're going to make it better. I don't know that it's going to be a new unit, I imagine it'll be like a harass attack to the Oracle.
Mm-hmm.
Feed to the Mama Core, something like that, and maybe mm-hmm. the Tempest gets tweaked.
And okay, I was just gonna say, you know, Jeff definitely hit it on the head there, but if you think about the overall impact of these units, how many of these new units do you think we're seeing from the other races? I mean, we're seeing tons of Warhounds, we're seeing tons of Vipers, Swarm Hosts. For Protoss, Jeff, what are you building at most? One to two Oracles and a single Mothership core the entire game?
I'm playing Wings of Liberty on bad maps.
Okay, well, yeah. I'm just
people who build them lose.
Yeah, no, I'm just saying, like, the overall impact of the game and the actual quantity of the new units that they implemented for Protoss that you will use is like three. You'll have two Oracles and a Mothership core. Yeah. Three units.
And they gave and the other races none of them have force fields like, by having collapsible rocks.
Yeah, I don't know what the whole collapsible rocks thing is all about.
That might be stretching a little bit, Collar. Just a tiny bit. Just a tiny bit.
The original question, like, if you look at what they did to Zerg, we still have our same base army. Like, the Hydra now has the speed upgraded Hive Tech, but we still have Roach, Hydra, Ling, Baneling, etc. We have all the basic units. We didn't gain a new equivalent of a Warp Gate unit, but the thing is we got really good support units that benefit. Actually, I guess you could kind of call the Swarm Host that, but we didn't really have an artillery unit before, whereas they have Colossus and Immortals and whatnot. But we got things that supplement our army well. Like, if you took the Mothership Core or the Oracle and made something that worked well in conjunction with the Protoss regular army ball, then that would be really, really good. Instead, they got stuff that doesn't really synergize with what they already have, so it makes it seem like they need something else. So, like, you can take the units they have and modify that without actually adding another Warp Gate or another Robo unit, necessarily. It's just it doesn't really work well in conjunction, and they're not good on their own.
I didn't ask my question right, but do you think Browder is able to, you know, say, oh, actually, we should add another unit? Or does he have the...
Oh, yeah. They have... You know? It's their game.
They're pretty ego-centric, though. I mean, I don't know.
No. We joke around about it, but to be honest, both Idri and I are on a forum where they're polling professionals actively right now, asking for advice on the balance of the game. And they've been extremely forthcoming and extremely open to hearing criticism and advice. Like, we're not even just leaving it to the units. The maps are absolute shit. We've told that to them, to their face, you know, via text, and we've told them, like,
but Jeff,
I mean, they know is what I'm saying, and they're open to it. They're not like, nah, we're stuck on the Tempest. You're gonna have to deal with it. They're not saying that. They're saying we're working on it. We're looking at it.
They are being much better about interacting with the community, with the pro community this time. Because before they would just send out emails to select bunches of people, and that was good. But now they actually have a forum with everyone like talking about things and discussing, and you have the ideas coming out and then getting modified by everyone else who's playing competitively, which is a much better approach. And they are reading it and interacting with it actively, so that is a massive, massive improvement from there. So I'm really happy with that.
Definitely, I was going to say, but Jeff, one of the new maps has a Diablo 3 tile set.
Does it?
Does.
Yeah, the four-player map is it's a replication of the Diablo 4 hell mode. Yeah, no, the big Protossy looking one is a replication of Diablo 3. Yeah. I know, right? Well, so the map developers at Blizzard are more focused on integrating Blizzard-themed tile sets than proper balance.
Well, Matt, I mean, hopefully, you know, in previous big patches and or betas, they did do some things with pulling some spells or adding some spells, and I don't know if there's any potentials there, but I have to imagine that the Protoss players are loud at this point.
Yeah, I mean, thanks for the call. I mean, the overall impact of Heart of the Swarm to Protoss is nil. I mean, it hardly changed the game for them at all, really.
Take the next call. We got Red on the line. Hello, Red. Welcome to Inside the Game. What's up? Red. Fucking A, Red, man.
I thought you said Red. I was
God,
yes.
No. I should have taken Blue's call. Fuck. I was
trying to formulate a Pokemon joke. I didn't get to it.
That sucks. All right. Well, we've got Dario calling in.
Like GLO Dario?
Not that Dario.
Another Dario.
A different Dario.
Hi, guys.
Hello.
Hey, how you doing?
Hello, not TLO.
Pretty good. Thanks for taking my call.
Of course.
Yep. All right, so I have a question. As soon as Heart of the Swarm is going to be released, aren't the Koreans going to have a bit of a problem? Because they will have to train the old expansion until the last minute. Because GSL is probably not going to switch, right?
Yeah, so, it'll switch, of course.
You think?
Well, not until the last minute, right?
Not mid-season.
So, yeah, no one's going to switch mid-season, but I mean, GSL only lasts, what, a month and a half? Like, maybe
right,
they're 2 weeks behind.
Right now, right? And you're going to be playing for next couple months, right?
Well, no, because I have four major tournaments in November, like, and every other foreign pro does as well. So it's either you choose to blow off the Wings of Liberty tournaments and you do really poorly in those and then have a leg up for Heart of the Swarm, or you choose to practice for the Wings of Liberty tournaments and then you're not as good in Heart of the Swarm.
Maybe,
it's a trade-off everyone makes.
Maybe we actually should just, like, establish this, right? Because it hasn't been talked about, even when we discussed the Heart of the Swarm. Is anyone having any problems going back from one to the other? Like, Idra, have you had any?
Yeah, that's a good question, actually.
There's a few little things, like you get out of the habit of counting your workers when you play Heart of the Swarm, and just little stuff like that. But it's
really,
not...
I can't break that habit.
Nah, I get out of it very quickly. It's harder for me
to
go back.
It's displayed, man. This is great.
You can see
I'm
it.
Counting him in HOTS. It's the stupidest thing ever. It looks so
dumb.
I did
that for like my first three games. I don't know. It's because I played more than you, I guess.
Yeah.
But it's not like I go back to Wings of Liberty and I'm like, where the fuck's my Viper? I need a Viper. It's like, it's pretty easy to switch back and forth. I'm not improving as quickly at Wings of Liberty because I'm not really practicing it as much, but it's not like I'm regressing.
Okay.
And it's also like a future investment as well.
Yeah.
When the switch eventually does happen, you'll
For me, I see it as more worthwhile to focus more on Heart of the Swarm than on Wings of Liberty just because that is the future. That is what's going to matter. And there's a lot more potential. It's like a lot more value in being really good at Heart of the Swarm at first than at placing but not winning all of the Wings of Liberty tournaments at the end, just because no one's going to win all of them. There's too many.
There's a risk to it, though. It's interesting. We've talked about this 1,000 times over.
It's a balance, for sure.
The stuff you're practicing could become obsolete, which is inherent in the beta.
Yeah. So you're hoping you're going to have a leg up against the Koreans?
Well, I'm going to practice Wings of Liberty a bunch before November, but I have no big tournaments until then, so I'm just taking this time to get a head start on Heart of the Swarm.
Cool. Good luck.
All right. Thanks for your call. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Dario.
Thank you, Dario. Let's take a telephone call.
Yeah.
Let's take a telephone call. We got area code 646. Hello, welcome to Inside the Game.
Hello.
Oh,
what's up, dude?
Hi.
Oh, hi.
What's up?
Hello?
Is this stage fright? Is this...
Color, you are on Inside
the Game. Get to the joke.
All right, he couldn't handle it. He couldn't handle it. That guy was calling since the phone lines opened up, and he fucking froze right there.
Oh.
He froze. All right.
If he calls back, can you take a joke? I think we'll have the guts.
I will. Yeah. If I see his number come back up, I will most certainly answer it.
I just got a... What I was waiting for is... Yeah, I just have a question for Greg. Why are you such a dick? And then he hangs up.
Are you going to suck as bad and hard as sword as you do in Wings of Liberty? I'm funny, Mom. Click, click. All right, we're going to try Red again.
We just got intro so good, man.
We got Red again. Hello, Red. Welcome to Inside the Game.
Hey.
Good thing.
Thanks for picking up again. I must have been on mute before.
Well,
I had a question.
That's because I'm a forgiving guy. Right? You just remember, other hosts would be a lot more dickish and would never take your call again.
I don't know. Maybe if you knew who I was, I've called him before.
Uh oh. All right, Red. What's up? Let's pretend like I didn't hear.
Thanks. My question was, I was curious, I guess, to the pros here. Where do you draw the line as far as the tools that you are given in-game? You've been talking about micro or lack thereof needed to do with like the Warhound and some of the other new units versus the Viper. Where do you draw the line as far as what's needed or what should be skill and what should be raising the skill barrier versus what are things that are extremely tedious to the player and that takes away from just being able to play the game, you know, do your strategy, and so on. For example, the new worker count thing. I watch a lot of your streams, and you're holding in shift and selecting over the units. You know, I guess you don't have to do that now.
Well,
a couple of the things that popped up in my mind were, why do you have to constantly box a whole bunch of units, and then, let's say, right-click on your gas geyser, and you see everybody shift-click off three drones, you know, or deselect one Zergling to chase after a Baneling from your hotkey. Those seems like that they're little extremely tedious things. I was just curious where you guys draw the line as far as having to click all over the place versus just being able to execute what you want to do in the game.
There is no right answer. It's subjective.
Yeah.
Like the more things that you have to do, the closer you get to Brood War, which is, of course, a gigantic skill gap, because they're able to do more actions more efficiently than other people can. And there's a certain allure to that. But there's a lot of people that didn't play Brood War simply because it was too difficult. It was outdated. It was intimidating. They would just downright say that. So every time one of these things comes up, like the supply count or the gas count, you're going to hear pros say, I don't like it. It's annoying. But at the end of the day, there's strong arguments for both sides, and neither of them is correct or wrong. As long as there's a balance. Like, if everything became easy, like you were saying, like if I attacked a single unit and the AI was so smart that it's just deselected whatever was necessary automatically, or if I clicked on a gas with 30 drones but it knew to just put three on there and the rest towards the minerals, that would be, in my opinion, getting way too close to being too easy. But someone else could come up with an argument that says, well, those actions can get used somewhere else.
Well, what about, say, a compromise? Say, what happens if there was a hotkey or key combination that would remove one or the first unit from your control group? Or what happens if there's a key combination where instead of right-clicking and all your units move to it, what happens if you hold in the hotkey combination and right-click and all your units move away from it?
I guess the desire to just put in those types of things that will make the game easier to play. I think that they look at it from a design and a UI perspective, and then they make the appropriate changes that can still not affect, I guess, the top level while bringing in the newer players. The worker count's one exception. Dude, I was kind of blown away today that I learned something watching Sheth and Destiny play Heart of the Swarm, that like when units are burrowed, their boxes become darker than the units that are unborrowed. I have no idea if that was even in Wings of Liberty. If it was, then fuck me. I don't think so, right? But like, so now you can just click on one of the dark boxes and select, say, all your burrowed infestors. You know, to me, that's a UI change that doesn't, you know, that makes, again, maybe a little bit easier, but I think that's the extreme, dude, to hit, like,
yeah,
you know, control shift one and take exactly one Ling off. So, like, that is why watching those Baneling battles, those Ling Bling battles are so awesome, is seeing the guy grab a Ling, send it over, grab another one, you know, that ultimate control.
Yeah, well, I think shift click is currently the, probably the most efficient way to do it anyway. I can't think of a key combination that would remove specific quantities of units. I mean, you don't know if you're going to want to remove one, two, or three.
Just sending off the one circling to one side, like, it's hard to imagine a solution that would actually be easier to do and without taking control away from the pro players, without automating it too much and, like, making assumptions for us about what we want to do. What if I don't want to send just one circling over there? What if I want to send over, like, 8 or 10 so there's actually a harass force that he has to deal with when he wants to expand?
Yeah, absolutely.
Like,
I guess the bottom line is there's always going to be an argument. Pros are always going to want more actions. Casuals are always going to want less.
Sure.
And the answer that Blizzard's trying to do is somewhere in the middle. And that's, you can ask these questions all you want, and there's going to be people that agree with you, and there's going to be people that disagree with you forever. It's an RTS question that's always been around.
I think at the end of the day, though, I think something that I hope never goes away is there has to be at least the capacity for players who are just that fast to excel above and beyond everyone else. I hope they never curtail it to the point where, say, a Flash is able to have his macro, you know, mitigated and equalized to other pro players. But I think there's also something to be said for, like, being able to split perfectly and things like that. You wouldn't want all those types of things to be autonomous because, you know, imagine if there was like a key that instantly spread all your bio ball or something. They actually had that in Command & Conquer for a while, like a key that would instantly disperse all of your units. I mean, that's part of the art form of the game. How and why players make those decisions and how well they execute it. And, like, spreading mining units that are under attack, things like that. That's part of the beauty of the game. And those little things allow players to shine above the rest. And I think the more that they get rid of those things, the more it hurts the game. And if you look at Brood War as an example, you know, Patrol Micro with the Vulture, never intended. The unit turns around instantly from a physics standpoint. It makes no sense. Mutalisks stacking on top of one another because of an Overlord makes no sense. But, I mean, those are the things that made the game amazing, and I don't know why there's a trend in game development to push everything towards realism, real physics, real...
Oh, right, yeah, because the Roche would just be able to crawl right into the side of a hill and then pop up in the base, right? No more wall.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. When I play a game, you know, I want to be able to do things that I cannot do in real life. I don't want the physics to make sense in my world. So, I mean, I don't know. I think it's just it's a trend in game development that you see across the entire industry right now. Everybody's trying to, like, cater to the masses and make everything more simple and all these guys. Maybe I'm just an old hipster gamer. I don't know.
Caller, we gotta take our last one. Red, thank you very much.
Right on. Thanks, guys.
Appreciate it. Yep, bye-bye.
Thank you, dude.
All right, we got to wrap in about 13 minutes, so I'm going to bring on Goatlust, and then we can do our final thoughts. Hello, Goatlust. Welcome to Inside the Game, episode 53. What's up?
My main man.
Oh, yeah, not a whole lot, mate.
Good to hear from you, man.
Oh, yeah, good to hear from you, gentlemen, too.
Do you have Heart of the Swarm beta yet?
No, I don't. I probably need one of you gentlemen to hook me up sometime.
All right, well, I'll tell you what. If I get the opportunity...
You can use my account. You can use my account if you want, man.
I guarantee you that I'll hook the Goatlust up. But only if you got a really fucking good question today.
He's always got a good question, man.
Oh, bloody hell. You put me right on
So what's up?
All right. So, I'm wondering... I see a lot of players... Well, maybe not a lot, but I've definitely seen some players say shit like they don't like being involved in any of the, like, content production side of things. And I'm just wondering, because the EG fellas are really into the whole content production side of stuff, How much do you think this actually affects your ability to get in enough practice, like doing shows like this and producing content? How much do you think it actually affects you, and do you think this is like a really legitimate concern that players have?
Not at all.
Didn't Greg say he didn't do any of it?
Yeah, filming my part for the Stefano video literally took, I'd say, 3-4 minutes. Like, I sit down, I put on a jersey, they set up the cameras, and then I run through the lines like 2-3 times. Even the Kingston commercial, that, like, both Kingston commercials was a day out of my time. Like, I'm not a day away, to quote Jeff, I'm not a day away from winning an MLG. It just doesn't work like that. A very insignificant amount of our time goes into those commercials, and the amount of value we get out of them is just absolutely incredible. It's a silly argument to have.
Now, because we have more time, what Greg just said is your answer, but it wouldn't be inside the game without me taking something Greg said really intelligently and just spending more time on it, so I'm going to do that.
Jesus.
This is a great question, first of all. Thank you so much for asking it, because this is something that pops up all the time. So this will serve as like a public service announcement, hopefully, so that people can kind of start to mature on this. And I know that there's a certain percentage of people that say it just to try to get at us anyways and whatever. They're not going to be reached. But when we, like, EG is constantly talked about as guys that split their time, is the word you'll see pop up between training and media. And it's hilarious. So let's take Greg as an example, who's a full-time professional gamer. He has Inside the Game, he has Unburrowed that we do about once a week, and then every once in a while we do another video. There was the Thorzane video, which actually Greg wasn't even a part of because he was traveling. There's the Stefano video, which he was a part of. He'll make appearances. In a single week, Greg will have to spend 2 hours on Inside the Game, which we're doing right now. And then for Unburrowed, it takes literally 15 minutes. There's no preparation for us. In fact, they're waiting for us because usually we're finishing our game. We get up, we sit in the kitchen, and we talk for 15 minutes. That's how long those take. And then we come back and we go back to playing. So in a week, Greg spends 2 hours and 15 minutes. But wait, there's more. Let's say for his part of the Stefano video, it took him 3 minutes. Let's quadruple that up to 12. Greg is now sitting at 2 hours and 27 minutes away from StarCraft II in 7 days, on average, a week. So when Greg says he spent a day for the Kingston video, he did that one time in the 2 years he's been playing StarCraft II, and it did take a day because the location was in California. If he was here, it would have taken several hours, and he would have gone right back to playing. So you take that, and you say, does the exposure Greg gets from that, does the connection he makes with fans, the service he does to his sponsors, his team, does that outweigh the 2 hours and 27 minutes plus 1 year divided by the year, or 1 day divided by the year or whatever? Does that amount of time detract from his skill? The answer is no. And that Greg is on the higher end of the spectrum, by the way. For the rest of our team, they're not on Inside the Game. They don't make appearances in all the videos. And Unburrowed is primarily Greg, me, and Machine, usually with, like, somebody else. DeMuslim, you know, sits in there, and whoever else is a guest in the house. So for most EG players, it's literally 27 minutes a week that they spend away from StarCraft II. The rest of the time, we play, and this number keeps getting thrown out there, but just it falls on deaf ears to a certain extent. We're required to play, like, 6 hours a day. Most of us play close to 10 hours a day, because guess what? We are boring as shit. The guests that we have come over to our house, they're like, hey, guys.
Let's do something.
Let's go outside and let's go to dinner or something. And we're all like, no. No, no, thanks. Like, Stefano has complained openly that we play too much. Jingna, the Infinity 7 leader who just came in and stayed with us for a while, she said it was intimidating how much we play because it's eye-opening to her and to other people. We actually just play StarCraft 2. I tweet about playing other games. Here's a dose of reality for you. I haven't played more than 25% of Mass Effect 3, a game that I was super excited for. I haven't touched Dead Space 2. It's still in its plastic wrapping. And the first game made me scream and cry like a baby girl at night because I was so excited about how terrifying it was. And I really want to play it. But we feel this pressure that whenever we're doing something else, we're supposed to be doing StarCraft. Like, Anna had to talk me down because I was, like, shaking yesterday because we're about to go celebrate my dad's 50th birthday. And I was worried that taking the couple days off for that drive was going to, like, make me irrelevant. I was really worried about that. That's the kind of pressure that's on us. So when you guys see videos and they get, like, 300,000 views, and our sponsors, after every video, our sponsors go, why the shit aren't you making that for us? And we're like, you didn't ask for it, BZ. Boom. And then they do ask for it, and they pay us more money, and that's business. That's how it actually works. So when it's like concept rolls around of like every – check every video. There's always the comment, this is what they do instead of practicing. You don't see MVP making announcement videos, do you? And it's like, no, because he's dry as shit and not actually funny. But if he could do it, he absolutely fucking would, because it would only build up his career for the low, low cost of 2 hours and 27 minutes a week. And that is why EG is successful and doing really well, even in times when their players aren't winning every tournament like they're expected to do.
Goatlust, I just throw out there that I remember an interview I did with Thorzane right before, right before he actually joined Evil Geniuses. And yeah, on Live on 3, during the interview, he said, you know, it's actually a shame that I don't get as much exposure as I see other teams getting
in
the grand scheme of things.
He was actually
like,
disappointed.
Yeah, he kind of foreshadowed it a little bit. So, you know, I do feel like there's probably other orgs out there that are trying to duplicate the efforts, or there's players that, definitely think about that thing. And that's good as far as I'm concerned, because I want to see more people moving in that direction. I think it's a great
Absolutely.
Way. People complain about, you know, the not putting the players at the spotlight. That video is fucking putting the players at the motherfucking spotlight. That is great.
Yeah.
You know, every
Suppy streams before EG, 300 viewers. The night he joins EG, he gets 2,500 people on his stream.
Yeah.
And now when he streams, it's an average of 1,200. He didn't get better by joining EG. He remained exactly the same, but because of the exposure and because of what EG has built up as a brand, more people are interested in him. And that's in part because of championships, but that's also in part because a lot of our players do things that other players don't do. And again, I need to emphasize this. The most time you spend in a week doing this is 2 hours and 27 minutes. If there's someone that's seriously sitting somewhere in this world, and they're mad that we are spending 2 hours and 27 minutes a week doing anything other than StarCraft 2, I'm not going to make a physically violent threat to you, but you are the person that I want to pull onto stage and defecate on when I
mean,
get on their chest. Good
Jeff,
choice.
Jeff, I don't even think you should worry about
I got a big
it
ass,
so much,
too,
man.
It's a huge turd.
I certainly don't think you would ever be irrelevant after a few days, and I think it sucks that EG gets so much pressure about those kinds of things. I mean, it's really people who just don't understand how business works and how being part of a professional sports team works. If you look at any professional sport, players do promotions, players do signings, players make appearances all over the place. They go on talk shows, they go on television. I mean, that is the way it works. So I don't understand why people are so baffled by the fact that EG is the first team to execute a sports business model properly, and all the other teams are just kind of trying to figure out what to do. I mean,
it's a great question, though, because it's a subject that comes up, and I feel like it's largely misunderstood. Because to be quite honest, if we did split our time, like if every day Greg's requirements were to do some media work for a couple hours a day, that would be too much. It absolutely would detract from your ability to play. And I'm going to be brutally honest, there's been a few times in the past where EG has said, hey, we've got to do this video, and it's like the night before we leave for an MLG, and that's an unacceptable time to do that, because the mindset of a player is sacred and it has to be protected in and around a tournament, absolutely. But EG is they don't like ignore the fact that we need to do that. So they've wisened up and gotten better as time goes on. It's absolutely true.
I think a big part of it is actually kind of what Taylor said. It's just there's such a disparity between us and other teams. People assume that other teams would be doing this if we're actually that easy, so we must be spending a lot more time and a lot more effort on it than we actually are. But in reality, it's pretty simple for us. Like, EG takes care of it. We just do the easy part. Like, it doesn't take a lot of time for us at all.
All right, we've got to wrap up. So Goat User. Goat User.
Goat User.
Yes. Fucking A, man. Fucking A. Well, I guess Goat User.
In that case, Goat Lust, any shout-outs you want to make before we end the show?
Yeah, shout-outs to my mom, my dad, my Twitter.
All right, Goat Lust, thank you, sir.
Yeah, you guys put that one to rest. Thanks for answering my question, guys.
Thank you, sir.
Great question as always, man. Always a pleasure to have you on.
All right, we've got only a couple minutes left, so we got to be quick about our final thoughts. So, Pain User, we'll start with you.
Goat User, taking it away.
Goat User.
All right, guys. So, we are going live in 1 hour, 7 p.m. PST, the first Heart of the Swarm beta tournament. We have some excellent, excellent players. $2,000 prize pool is on the line. Twitch and Astro are sponsoring. Me and HD will be casting. We might have a special guest caster early on in the tournament. We're going to cast every single game in every best of three. Finals will be tomorrow, 4 p.m. PST, best of five. It's going to be really exciting. I put a lot of work and effort into this, and I'm really, really excited to see it take off. So, guys, tune in, please, and let's make this an awesome event.
Excellent.
And follow me on Twitter, if you would, at PainUser. I'd appreciate it.
Idra?
Follow me on Twitter, at Idrajit, IDRAJIT. Thank you to Evil Geniuses, all our great sponsors, new Raid Call, our new title sponsor, Raid Call, Intel, Monster Steel Series, Against CyberX, Beyond Gaming, and Sapphire. And thank you all for watching. I remembered it. It stuck that time.
Good job. In Control.
Thank you everyone for tuning in. I've been really happy. Inside the Game's got an amazing audience week in and week out, and
yep.
The calls, we always like to kind of hate on it and joke about it, but to be quite honest, like what I envisioned the calling section being is actually just like someone calling and giggling and then yelling boner and then hanging up over and over again. But it's been mostly thought provoking, good questions. So tip of the hat to you guys, you're an awesome community. For me personally, this is we're starting Masters Cup as we talked about during the show. Tonight is Complexity and Empire, so a responsible internet human would have both the PhD and the Masters Cup open.
So open them all.
You can watch some HOTS action and then some TBT action, because three out of four matchups tonight are Terran versus Terran. And if I had one birthday wish, if
Jeff's
I had
just
one
helping
birthday,
me out over here.
Dude, that's fun. Like Tasteless, like fucking worst nightmare. And I like imagine like Tasteless wakes up like cold sweat. Fuck, man, I had to
dude,
cast.
Yeah.
Oh my god, it's like 30 happening. TVTs.
It's not just TVTs, too. It's Team Empire TVTs. It's happy TVTs.
Remember when god, Tasteless dude. Was casting the GSL TV TV TVT, and they would cut back to Tasteless and Artosis, and you'd just be like,
it just like yeah, I want to die.
Oh my god.
Go ahead, Jeff.
Just so again, big shout out to everyone. Today was my birthday, and I've gotten lots of
happy birthday.
Awesome, oh, thank you, man. Lots of awesome messages on Twitter and Facebook and stuff, and I really, really appreciate that. And I guess just to end on the note, like I thought Goatless question was so important, but in general, I think it's important to give this credence as well. I don't expect a world where EG doesn't get criticized, and one of the things that I want to always end with, and I want people to have at the forefront of their mind when they think about us. Is I am terrified. No, I'm not terrified. That's like me being trying to be too eloquent. I'm not grubby. Shut the hell up, Jeff. I like the world where EG is critiqued, criticized, and scrutinized harshly, because we deserve to be held to that standard, and we deserve to strive and fight to that standard. If we are releasing shitty content that nobody cares about, if we had a bunch of players that not only, you know, never won, but also nobody really enjoyed watching or hearing talk on shows and giving their opinions, then we would not be a successful business model. We would not be a good team. But the fact of the matter is, because you guys are either interested or, well, you're interested but in a negative way, you're helping us grow, and our vision is great, I think. We're trying to get players the best salaries they possibly can to do what they love and to live the best life they possibly can, and you're helping us with that. So I want you to know, like, from the bottom of my heart, thank you for the criticism. Thank you for the interest, and thank you for the attention, and we're going to keep working to earn that, good or bad.
And like that being said, he just made an excellent, excellent point. Those of you that hate on it and think about it from that perspective, you are an idiot, because we pro gamers work so hard. Like, people have no fucking clue what you go through to compete at that level. It is your entire life. It consumes everything. They have the talent, and this game has a skill ceiling that's so high that all of these players deserve to be making these kinds of salaries, and EG is, in fact, helping esports 100% by paying these players these huge salaries. That is not a bad thing.
These are all steps in the right direction, and I hate that people look at it with a negative light, because that has been the problem with esports throughout all of history. Players don't make shit. And anyway, that's rant off.
Well, with that being said, I'd like to shout out to our sponsors, SteelSeries, Monster Energy, and HyperX. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Inside the Game, episode 53. We'll be back tomorrow with some Live on 3. Coming up next on One More Game, of course, we have got the Evil Geniuses Masters Cup. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next time. I'm out of here. Peace, bitches. right, guys, I just got the update. It Control's on his way to the studio right now. So Evil Geniuses Masters Cup will start immediately after that. Thanks to the amazing technology of Twitch TV, you can actually just stay on this channel, and when they go live, you'll hear it. Turn up your speakers a little bit. It may scare the shit out of you, but at least you'll know the Masters Cup is on. This is DJ Wheat, and coming up next, the Evil Geniuses Masters Cup in just a moment. Stream's going to go down, but it will come back.